Hi everyone, and welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you so much for joining me here today on this lovely podcast. This week, I am going to be tackling a text by the wonderful Genevieve Berand. This text is called Your Invisible Power. I think over this past year, and I don't think I'm really just speaking for myself, but many people that I have come into contact with are really trying to create either small businesses or a new side gig for themselves. And they have been asking a lot of questions about the principles of manifestation. I thought it would be important, even for myself, as I would say, aspire to become some sort of side gig entrepreneur, to really revisit some seminal texts when it comes to manifestation. Now, the word manifestation, I believe, didn't really come into modern usage until after The Secret was published, and then The Law of Attraction by the Hicks, etc., etc. There are so many books on manifestation, and I feel like this is a topic I will probably tackle time and time again, just because I think the Law of Attraction, I'm not going to say it's been misinterpreted at all. However, if you have read The Secret, and this is, you know, a book that everyone references when they talk about manifestation, there are a lot of critiques on that book in a sense that, it focuses on the material aspect of life. It's very materialistic in a sense that it is very superficial. So the principles in themselves are about the acquisition of material without any substance behind it. And I think that it is, in a way, a very valid critique. However, when I've looked at that book, I have found that Rhonda Byrne, who is the author of that book, referenced older books where there were, I would say, that they were kind of called old prosperity models that were published in the early 20th century and before that, that talks about manifestation, but actually never used the word manifestation. And one of those books is Your Invisible Power by Genevieve Berand. If you look at The Secret, Rhonda Byrne, I believe she either quotes or she at least references Genevieve Berand in the book and another individual that I'm going to briefly talk about today. I always find that when there's an explosion of some sort of new information that everyone's gravitating towards, it's important to kind of get that foundational knowledge first before taking it at face value. And for me, doing a deep dive into manifestation and how I would say this law of attraction kind of came into our awareness is super important as I try to create certain things for myself. I like to look at multiple perspectives to see how other people have kind of visualized and created their dreams and how they have come into their own success. So although myself, like many others, credits The Secret, I think looking at other seminal, very, very old texts is super important to get that perspective. So that's kind of the reason behind why I wanted to read this book, just to gauge a new perspective on this law. So let's talk a little bit about Genevieve Berand. The book that we're focusing on is Your Invisible Power. It was published back in 1921, so it is old. And this means that this information has been around forever, prior to the 20th century. Obviously, it's just reincarnated and repackaged so that it's accessible to the masses. Understood. So let's talk a little bit about the author. She was born in 1881 in Paris. She ended up becoming a teacher of mental science. She studied with another teacher who is super important and also who was highly referenced in The Secret. His name is Thomas Troward. She studied with him for only 2 years, and we'll talk about that. However, she later on in life created a school, a New Thought school, and she called it the School of Builders in New York in 1915. And then she founded another school in Los Angeles as well. So as I said, she is quoted by Rhonda Byrne in The Secret as being an expert. She has written three books, obviously Your Invisible Power. Another book that the title is so long, but I'll let you know what it is anyway. How to Live Life and Love It. And then the third one is Attaining Your Desires by Letting Your Subconscious Mind Work for You, which I still haven't read, but is totally on my list. So as I stated, she worked with one of the, I don't know if we would call him leaders of the New Thought or Christian Science, but definitely we could consider him that way. His name is Thomas Troward, who again was referenced in The Secret. He was born in 1847. He was an English judge in British India, so that's pretty interesting. He also studied comparative religion. He wrote many lectures on mental science, and he ended up being the president of the International New Thought Alliance. Genevieve Berand was his only student. If you do your research on him, you'll find that he has written quite a lot of material. He has written many lectures on mental science in Dore and even in Edinburgh. Those texts are referenced quite a bit, and I wouldn't be surprised if Rhonda Byrne really looked at those lectures. Interesting thing to mention before I get into this discussion, he was a Christian, and he was completely opposed to any occult study or practice. And this is something that she references in her book. He would not take her as a student without telling her first and foremost up front that if she had any interest in the tarot or Kabbalah or any occult studies, she would not find it with him. As I mentioned, he was a Christian. However, I think his focus was like on Christian mental science. So that's kind of interesting to note, and I'll come back to that later on. So let's talk about how this woman ended up getting into what we call mental science. So Genevieve was a widow. Her husband died. He left her some money, but not a ton of money, enough money to live off of. She was sad and lonely, and in the book she talks about feeling very empty and isolated, even though her friends and society would have never guessed that. So during this time, she started studying mental science and Christian Science, and she didn't really find it very fulfilling. However, one of her friends in that community unexpectedly invited her to visit a teacher. And this person, more interestingly enough, was a teacher and a seer by the name of Abdul Baha, whose father founded the Baha'i faith. So that's quite, I think, interesting when you just think about her life. So when she went to meet this guy, he told her that she would end up traveling the world and spending some time seeking quote unquote truth. And eventually she would go around the world and share all of this information, which does end up happening. So a few days later, she ends up upon another visitation to go meet someone. She ends up in this office of a New Thought practitioner, and she's waiting for them. And she sees a set of books on a table, which end up being the Edinburgh Lectures on Mental Science, created by or written by Thomas Troward. So coincidence? Most likely not. As I told you, she was very unhappy dealing with mental science or Christian Science. It wasn't very fulfilling for her, and she wasn't finding the answers that she needed. And she was really looking for a new way. And here she comes into this office and finds these books. So she looked at these books and she ends up reading the lectures, the Edinburgh lectures and the Dore lectures, which she found to be an easier read. And upon reading that, and she goes into this at length, about the books and what attracted her to the books, she decided that she wanted to study with him. However, she really didn't even know whether he took students or not, and so she took it upon herself to kind of implement some of the exercises he wrote in his books. One of the exercises was, of course, on what we know today to be visualization. and the Edinburgh Lectures. She ends up reading about the law of attraction. So again, this tells you that this is quite old and probably even older. So she reads about this and she comes upon this chapter on causes and conditions, which spoke about visualizing. So her predicament at the time was, I need to get to England and I need quite a bit of money to get there to be his student and to meet him. Even though, again, she had no idea if he took students or not. So approximately she needed $20,000 to go to England to meet him. And so she decided to try to implement some of his practices in his book. So she needed $20,000 and she decided to visualize every single day, 2 to 3 times a day, morning, noon, and night, that she would see somebody counting $21,000 bills to her, and then it was handed directly to her. So she kept seeing this in her mind. She made it even more specific. She saw herself getting over to England, you know, commuting across the country, visiting with him, being his student, etc. She went into very, very distinct details in her, I would say, visualization, and this is what she did. Now, what's interesting is that, again, she needed the $20,000. Can anybody guess how long it took her to make that type of money? Now, for most of us, you know, if we were quote unquote being realistic, we would think, okay, we're going to give ourselves like 6 to 8 months at least to try to save up that kind of money or make that kind of money, right? However, for her, it took her exactly 6 weeks. 6 weeks. I was reading this book and I told my friend and he totally flipped out. And so of course he's extremely analytical and he said, well, what did she do? How did she make it? Tell me the details. What was every step, etc. And you know, she explains to us how she does this. However, she doesn't outline step by step by step by step by step, which is, I kind of feel like, the secret that we all are missing. So here's what she tells us in terms of kind of like how this money came into being. She tells us in her book that a circumstance appeared which indicated the direction through which the $20,000 would come. And she followed the circumstance step by step. So one opportunity would come and then she would follow it, and then another one and another one until the $20,000 came and she ended up being able, you know, to go to England. So one thing she tells us in the book regarding this whole visualization and the $20,000 is that her teacher, Thomas Troward, he says that in order for us to be able to, let's say, accumulate a certain amount of money, right? It is the visualization and the commitment to that visualization, yes, 2 or 3 times a day with the specifics. However, the information from above comes through an idea of a line of action to follow. So his thing is that you become an open vessel through which to receive the intelligent idea. And it is our job to work through that. So for her, through this active, I don't think she really uses the word meditation, but it's through this active visualization process and being open, she received ideas. And she said that they were small. So something very small would come to her and then she would just act on it and then something else small would come. She never specifies what it is, but she is saying that these little doors opened and she just walked through them. And then the more she trusted, the more would come, and then boom, within 6 weeks, she had the money. However, she does say one thing I think is super important for us to also take into consideration when we're in the active process of manifesting. So there's one statement that she kept repeating to herself over and over and over and over throughout this whole time before she gets this $20,000. She says, "My mind is a center of divine operation." She says that this statement constituted the only apparent means of attracting to herself the $20,000. So if we kind of revisit that statement, my mind is a center of divine operation. Think about what that means. It means that it is a space wherein the divine itself can give us what we need. And I'm not saying in the materialistic sense. I'm saying this in a way that it is open. It is the vessel through which to receive the spark, the divine idea that can be transmitted through us. Because it has to go, God can only work through us. And I'm only using the word God in the sense, I mean, all that is can only work through us. Okay, so she kept repeating this statement to herself several times a day. And then it's as if, boom, this magical miracle gave her these little ideas that would get her there. Because we have to remember, you know, all that is knows best. Will always know better than us. It is better to rely on something that can see all of the chess moves across the board, as opposed to ourselves, our own ego, that can only see what's in front of us, and not how that one thing can affect everything else down the line, right? So what ends up happening is, you know, she gets this money and she just books her passage. And she starts writing letters to this teacher, Trower, because she wants to be his student, and he never replies, but she still books her passage anyway, okay? And finally, it's like the letters, you know, they never come, and she stops writing them. But I actually should correct myself. She actually didn't write the letters. A friend of hers wrote the letters for her because her friend was a better writer. And she books her passage. But it's like as soon as she books her passage, she finally gets one letter from him that says, I don't take students. The end. However, that doesn't stop her. She felt really dejected, but something kept telling her to go anyway. And she talks about that in the book, how she kept getting some sort of message that told her to go anyway. So she goes. She books her passage, and then she ends up going to his house, and she meets up with him. And she has tea with him and a friend and a couple of other people, and they never talk about her being a student or her wanting to be a student. Right as she's leaving the house, she brings it up, asking, you know, do you take students? Can I please be your student, etc.? And he says, no, I simply don't have the time. And she accepts, and she starts walking to the car with her friends. But something stops him. And then he walks up to her and he pretty much decides at the last second to tell her, you know what, send me a letter in a couple months and we'll see if by that time I feel like I have the time and then we can see what we can do. So boom, there it is, you know, the opportunity. So some time passes and then I can't remember if she reaches out to him first, which I think she does, and then he actually responds. And instead of just accepting her as a student outright, he sends her this passage from the book of Revelation in the Bible, like three lines, and he asks her to decipher this passage. And her interpretation of the passage would determine whether or not she could actually be his student, which I thought was interesting. And I assumed the next part in the book, because this is all in the book, the next part of the book, I assumed, was actually going to, you know, talk about the fact that intuitively, you know, she went within and got the answer, but that is actually not at all what ended up happening. So she keeps trying to decipher it. She asks other friends about it and, you know, wants to get their interpretation because she really wants to be this, you know, guy's student, but she isn't really trusting some of the messages that, you know, is coming through these people. So finally, luck would have it that she ends up meeting with this professor who also does astrology on the side, and she ends up getting this reading from him, like this astrological reading from him about her life, and she gives him, you know, the information about her birth date and everything. And the book of Revelation never comes up, this passage. However, she really wants to ask him, and so finally she does. And he deciphers, and I'm putting quotes around that, deciphers the book for her and gives her this interpretation. So she thinks it's satisfactory, and she thinks this is it. this is the answer. He's going to take me. And she submits it to him. Well, lo and behold, it's exactly what this guy, Troward, is looking for. So she ends up becoming his pupil, but just for 2 years. I don't know why it was only for 2 years, but it was really only for 2 years. And that's all that she really kind of talks about in the book. She doesn't really go into depth about their relationship, but she ends up learning some things from him. But I would say, after reading her work and, you know, learning a lot about him, I feel like after their time together, she ends up growing and expanding and seeking out new principles and new theories. Maybe because she learned, you know, maybe she only stayed because she could only learn certain things from him. But maybe she felt like she learned everything that she could, and then she moved on to other teachers. But all I know is that they spent 2 years together. Okay, so now I want to talk to you about some of the principles that she talks about in her book, because I think it's super important. However, for most of you who are listening, none of this is new. It is now old to us because of The Secret. However, at the time, it was profoundly new. And she ended up creating these schools later on, which attracted a good, you know, I would say a huge group of people who were interested in seeing her and getting her take, which is pretty profound also if you think about, you know, being in the early 1900s, through the 1920s and so on, that she, as a female, can become kind of this leader of the new thought. So one of the principles in the book that she talks about is that your mind is your universal creative power. She wants you to remember truthfully, and she says this in not so many words though, that everything is truly mental. So I personally think, and I don't know for sure, I imagine that she studied some old texts, ancient texts on the wisdom of mentalism. That's my own personal suspicion, but I do think that she probably revisited some of that material. But she does say that your mind is your superpower. Because if we think about it, everything, you know, everything comes from your thought. It is your, you know, your creative box, if you will. It's your creative toolbox. And she says, because your mind is your universal creative power, like your superpower, it's super important for you to begin to visualize. So she has a section in her book that refers to how one can attract the things that they desire, right? And she does talk about thought, visualization, etc. So again, none of this is new material for us. And you can see how much Rhonda Byrne from The Secret really took from this work and other lectures as well. So coming from her book, she says, "The power within you, which enables you to form a thought picture, is the starting point of all there is. In its original state, it is the undifferentiated, formless substance of life." And I love the way that she puts that. Your thought picture forms the mold, so to speak, into which this formless substance takes shape. Visualizing or mentally seeing things and conditions as you wish them to be is super important. So here again, we talk about the whole process of creating something from nothing, that it is through your imagination that allows you to create a form, if you will. And so she says, when you first begin to visualize seriously, you may feel, as many others do, that someone else may be forming the same picture you are, and that naturally would not suit your purpose. Do not give yourself any unnecessary concern about this. Simply try to realize that your picture is an orderly exercise of the universal creative power specifically applied. Then you may be sure that no one can work in opposition to you. The universal law of harmony prevents this. Endeavor to bear in mind that your mental picture is universal mind exercising its inherent powers of initiative and selection specifically. God, or what she kind of refers to as universal mind, made man for the special purpose of differentiating himself through him. I think this is a super interesting section, you guys, in the book. Everything that is came into existence in this same way by this self-same law of self-differentiation and for the same purpose. First, the idea, the mental picture or the prototype of the thing, which is the thing itself in its incipiency or plastic form. The great architect of the universe contemplated himself as manifesting through his polar opposite, which she calls matter. And the idea expanded and projected itself until we have a world, or many world. Many people ask, but why should we have a physical world at all? The answer is, because it is the nature of a rigid originating substance to solidify under directivity rather than activity, just as it is the nature of wax to harden when it becomes cold, or plaster of Paris to become firm and solid when exposed to the air. Your picture in this same divine substance in its fluid state taking shape through the individualized center of divine operation, your mind. And there is no power to prevent this combination of spiritual substance from becoming physical form. It is the nature of spirit to complete its work, and an idea is not complete until it has made for itself a vehicle. The one thing I love that she says is the great architect of the universe contemplated himself or herself for our purposes as manifesting through his polar opposite, which is called matter. So she goes to some lengths to explain the theology behind what she describes as the law of attraction. There is this creative power, this universal mind or God that generates the universe and which, for completion's sake, likes to see thought manifested in physical form. Human beings are like the creative power in miniature, also able to turn thoughts into reality or to literally make their own worlds in the same way that God has total command over the universe. Human beings exist so that the universal mind can be differentiated, expressed in an endless variety of personalities. Therefore, by visualizing and then bringing something into form, we are, in essence, fulfilling God's will for us to be unique and powerful. We fulfill our personality by creating something out of nothing. She continues on and she says, we all possess more power and greater possibilities than we realize. And visualizing is one of the greatest of these powers. It brings other possibilities to our observation. When we pause to think for a moment, we realize that for a cosmos to exist at all, it must be the outcome of a cosmic mind, which binds all individual minds to a certain generic unities of action, thereby producing all things as realities and nothing as illusions. Pretty interesting. She also says, you realize that concrete material form is an absolute necessity of the creative process, and that matter is not an illusion, but a necessary channel through which life differentiates itself. If you consider matter in its right order as the polar opposite to spirit, you will not find any antagonism between them. On the contrary, together they constitute one harmonious whole. And when you realize this, you feel in your practice of visualizing that you are working from cause to effect, from beginning, I would say to end, but she says to finish. So while looking over that passage, it kind of makes me think about, and I don't know if this was her intention, it makes me think about this whole idea as what we think of as God, or what we have defined as God, I guess in the traditional sense and maybe in the New Age sense, that it is, God is the all that is the cosmic mind, which means it is the creator of all things. It is the spirit of all things, right? And I remember, I don't remember if I I think I did put this in my book a while back, but I remember the first time that the angels explained what God was to me. And, you know, they were very quick to let me know, even though I was very naive, that God was, you know, not man nor woman, that what we have called God throughout the ages is really just all that is. And that's how they would always reference that being. However, I also remember them telling me very specifically that we are, all of us, we are thoughts in the mind of God, aka the cosmic mind. And I understand it, but I've never been able to really explain what I thought that was. But everything does originate from this cosmic source of all things. And I'm just thinking about the natural transition from spirit, what has no substance, to something that is of form. Is it the natural progression of creation to create from the idea, the thought, which originally has no substance, right? No material structure to it, then for it to manifest into matter? Is that the natural creative process until, you know, that matter becomes obliterated and transferred into something else, what have you? Anyway, I kind of was wondering about that when I was reading this passage, if that was the natural progression of creation within itself or with manifestation in itself. Maybe it is a natural progression here on Earth because this is the third dimension where everything vibrates to the point of being matter, but that's just kind of my two cents on that. It would have been nice for her to give some more of an explanation, in my opinion. But I also thought, and maybe I misinterpreted this, so I'm still kind of thinking here, when she said, you know, the fact that something is created, or something that is created is the opposite of what it is. So again, form is the opposite of spirit in a way, right? It's opposite form. It just kind of made me think about us being here on a planet or a dimension of duality and how we are utilizing the formless to create form. So out of nothing comes something. I don't know. It was just kind of something I was playing with, thinking about this. Anyway, I'm going to switch gears and talk to you about this section where it's all about your mental picture. She goes on this deep dive and likens the universal mind as it works very similar to a large telephone system. And she thinks it's a great simile to use. And I want to review this so you guys can get an idea of how she thought of or defined the universal mind. The operation of a large telephone system may be used as a simile, she says. The main or head central subdivides itself into many branch centrals, every branch being in direct connection with its source, and each individual branch, recognizing the source of its existence, reports all things to its central head. Therefore, when assistance of any nature is required, new supplies, difficult repairs to be done, or whatnot, the branch in need goes at once to its central head. It would not think of referring its difficulties or its successes to the main central of a telegraph system, though they belong to the same organization. You guys can tell this is written in the 1920s for telegraphs. These different branch centrals know that the only remedy for any difficulty must come from the central out of which they were projected. And this is actually a very great simile. I think we can all kind of visualize that. If we, as individual branches of the universal mind, would refer our difficulties in the same confident manner to the source from which we were projected and use the remedies that it has provided, we would realize what Jesus said, or realize, excuse me, what Jesus meant when he said, "Ask and ye shall receive." Our every equipment would be met. Surely the Father must supply the child. The trunk of the tree cannot fail to provide for its branches. People out there who hate hearing the word Jesus, take what you can from this, and don't put so much emphasis on the word. Listen to the message. Everything animate or inanimate is called into existence or outstandingness by a power which itself does not stand out. The power that creates the mental picture, the originating spirit substance of your picture desire, does not stand out. It projects the substance of itself that is a solidified counterpart of itself while it remains invisible to the physical eye. I like that description. Only those will ever appreciate the value of visualizing who are able to realize, and again, she references the Bible here, Paul's meaning when he said, "The worlds were formed by the word of God. Things which are seen are not made of things which do appear," which is such a great, I think, reference here, because when we think about how things are manifested, right, we are in our own particular minds creating worlds. We are creating, I don't know, abundance. We're creating love or what have you, right? And something comes into form out of what is not yet seen. It comes from the mind, this powerhouse that is connected to the hubbub, which is the cosmic mind of all things. And all of our minds, we have to remember, are joined, right? Again, we are just a branch, but we're all connected to the same source. There is nothing unusual or mysterious in the idea of your picture desire coming into material evidence. It is the working of a universal natural law. The world was projected by the self-contemplation of the universal mind, and this same action is taking place in its individualized branch, which is the mind of man, which is very cool. I like the way she wrote that. Everything in the whole world has its beginning in mind and comes into existence in exactly the same manner, from the hat on your head to the boots on your feet. All are projected thoughts, solidified. I feel like that needs to be on a t-shirt or something. Your personal advance in evolution depends upon your right use of the power of visualizing. And again, the right use of power is very important here. And your use of it depends on whether you recognize that you yourself are a particular center through and in which the originating spirit is finding ever new expression of potentialities already existing within itself. This is evolution. This continual unfolding of existing through outwardly invisible things. And I'm underlining this because I kind of want to come back to this whole idea of your right use of power. Let me circle this too. Your mental picture is the force of attraction that evolves and combines the originating substance into specific shape. Your picture is the combining and evolving powerhouse, so to speak, through which the originating creative spirit expressed itself. Its creative action is limitless, without beginning and without end, and always progressive and orderly. It proceeds stage by stage, each stage being a necessary preparation for the one to follow. And reading that reminds me just takes me to what she said in terms of how the opportunities kind of came to her, which were like little stepping stones to get her, for her example, the $20,000, right? Stage by stage. So now let us see if we can get an idea of the different stages by which the things in the world have come to be. If we can get at the working principle, which is producing these results, we can very quickly and easily give it personal application. First, we find that the thought of originating life, or spirit about itself, is its simple awareness of its own being. And this, this produced a primary ether, a universal substance out of which everything in the world must grow. So she's kind of, some of this information, she is getting, not from her own personal studies, but also at her own personal contemplation, but she's also referencing, again, the work of Troward. And I'm not sure which lecture this comes from, but she does say, Troward also tells us that though this awareness of being is a necessary foundation for any further possibilities, it is not much to talk about. It is the same with individualized spirit, which is yourself. Before you would entertain the idea of making a mental picture of your desire as being at all practical, you must have some idea of your being, of your I am, and just as soon as you are conscious of your I am-ness, you begin to wish to enjoy the freedom which this consciousness suggests. You want to do more and be more, and as you fulfill this desire within yourself, localized spirit begins conscious activities in you. The thing you are most concerned with is the specific action of the creative spirit of life, universal mind specialized. The localized God germ, which is what she calls your spirit, in you is your personality, your individuality. And since the joy of absolute freedom is the inherent nature of this God germ, it is natural that it should endeavor to enjoy itself through its specific center. And as you grow in the comprehension that your being, your individuality, is God particularizing himself, herself, you naturally develop divine tendencies. As you grow in understanding as to who you are, where you came from, and what the purpose of your being is, how you are to fulfill the purpose for which you are intended, you will more and more afford a center through which the creative spirit of life can enjoy itself, and you will realize that there can be but one creative process filling all space, which is the same in its potentiality, whether universal or individual. Furthermore, all that is, whether on the plane of the visible or invisible, had its origin in the localized action of thought or a mental picture, and this includes yourself, because you are universal spirit localized, and the same creative action is taking place through you. So there's a lot more, but let's kind of just go over some of that information. I like the whole idea that as you grow in understanding as to who you are, where you came from, and what your purpose for being is, you'll have a more understanding of your creative spirit. You will come to understand this whole creative process and that we have within ourselves a very specific creative process through which the cosmic mind works through. And we can, if we were to sit down and I would say visualize, because I think visualizing is super helpful, a link with our mind, like she says, as kind of like this telephone, this crazy large telephone system. If we think about that, we are a branch, but there is a central hubbub, which is the cosmic mind. And anytime we call for an idea, for an understanding, that I kind of look at it as these, you know, electrical circuits that are connected to this hubbub. And the idea is shooting through this electricity back into your mind, right? That even though we see ourselves as being just this separate individual being, that that's not really the case. It just looks like it while we're here, so that we can individually create something out of what looks like nothing, but really it's the connection of your mind to the cosmic source, right? So I really like just that idea within itself. I also like that she says God, him or herself, is particularizing through you. And I think that for most of us, we feel, and I know this is a little bit of a tangent, but you know, for most of us, again, we look at God as this separate thing, you know, that we pray to and we ask questions to. We think it's separate, that it's there and we're over here, but in truth, we're all really just one. It just looks like it's different because that is the experience down here. However, I think being down here, you know, on this planet, we are the expressions of God. And I really am of the belief that through our own creations, that the cosmic mind is constantly expanding through what we create, through, and we create our experiences to a certain extent. And visualizing is that part of the process of that particular creation. So I wanted to go back quickly to this one phrase that she uses in her book about your personal advance and evolution depends upon your right use of the power of visualizing. And I don't know where in the book she talks about this, but she does make a reference to, she doesn't necessarily use the phrase, the wrong use of visualizing, but she does kind of talk about the fact that whatever is in your mind is what your experience is going to be and what you're going to produce. Again, these are not new principles for us who've been studying this work. However, it's super important to think about the wrong use of visualization, which is a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So, and this goes back to negative self-talk, negative thinking, etc., that if you are consistently utilizing your mind, filling your mind with fear, anxiety, worry, and being a so-called realistic person, right? Which we know has a negative flair attached to it, then your outcome is going to be of which your mind has created, which has harnessed all this anxiety. Your outcome will simply become what you have created. If you have placed all of your energy, if you spend your time worrying, this isn't going to go right, then it's just really not going to go right because you have misused your superpower, which in fact is your mind. Again, I think it's very important to reiterate here that there is no separation between the sun and its rays, the cosmic mind, and even your own mind. So Genevieve also includes in her book some really important things to remember while you're using your thought power to produce new conditions for yourself. She says, first and foremost, be sure to know what conditions you wish to produce. Don't misuse your power, right? Then weigh carefully to what further results the accomplishments of your desire will lead. By letting your thought dwell upon a mental picture, you are concentrating the creative spirits to the center where all its forces are equally balanced. Visualizing brings your objective mind into a state of equilibrium, which enables you to consciously direct the flow of spirit to a definitely recognized purpose and to carefully guide your thought from including a flow in the opposite direction. This is super important, and God, I wish I could bring in another book just to talk about this one section, but I can't because we're already almost at an hour. But this is super important that when you're visualizing, again, make sure that all of your energy is directed to that one thing. That's why focus is so important here. You have to carefully guide your thought so that you are not allowing all the negativity to come in and then pull you away from that positive flow. Right? Once that negativity starts to rear its ugly head and creep in, then your focus shifts to the polar opposite. And then that's where your creative power is going to be directed. You must always bear in mind that you are dealing with a wonderful potential energy, which is not yet differentiated into any particular mold, and that by the action of your mind, you can differentiate it into any specific mold that you will. Your picture assists you to keep your mind fixed on the fact that the inflow of this creative energy is taking place, because again, you are pulling it towards you like a magnet. Also, by your mental picture, you are determining the direction you wish the sensitive creative power to take. And by doing this, the externalization of your picture is a certainty. One thing she does talk about in this book, and this just reminds me again, that she talks about how your creative power, which is really your imagination, okay, or your mind, is super sensitive, and that's why you are always supposed to be guarding your mind. This is something that I've read in many books, how important it is. Even my own father has told me this after his study of a couple of texts. This is a conversation for another day. But he has always told me, always make sure to protect your mind, like you would protect your body. because your mind, depending upon what you give your attention to, will direct your experience. And you always want to make sure during those dark moments that you're able to redirect your focus so that your future is not going to be, or you're not going to have an experience of that negativity in the future. So remember when you're visualizing properly that there is no strenuous effort on your thoughts to hold your thought forms in place. Strenuous effort defeats your purpose and suggests the consciousness of an adverse force to be fought against, and this creates conditions adverse to your picture. By holding your picture in a cheerful frame of mind, you shut out all thoughts that would disperse the spiritual nucleus of your picture. Because the law is creative in its action, your pictured desire is certain of accomplishment. So, another great thing to remember in visualizing is that you're making a mental picture for the purpose of determining the quality you are giving to the previously undifferentiated substance and energy, rather than to arrange the specific circumstances for its manifestation. That is the work of creative power itself. It will build its own forms of expression quite naturally, if you allow it, and it will save you a great deal of needless anxiety. What you really want is expansion in a certain direction, whether if it's of health, wealth, or whatnot. And so long as you get it, what does it matter whether it reaches you by some channel which you thought you could count on, or through some other existence of which you had no idea? You are concentrating energy of a particular kind for a particular purpose. So bear in mind and let specific details take care of themselves, and never mention your intention to anyone. I think this is so important. I feel like I should do an entire episode on the fact that whenever you're creating anything, whenever you're what we call today manifesting, do not tell anybody. Keep it to yourself. Keep it as a secret. This is something even my guy told me this quite some years ago, because I was thinking of doing something. And he was like, can you please keep your mouth shut? But I had no idea that that was so important. And it's also important because, people who are your so-called friends will not always be your biggest supporters. You would be surprised if you went to who you thought was a good friend and you told them of your ideas to do this, that, and whatever, right? Whatever. And they will be the first people to shoot you down and say, that doesn't sound realistic. How are you going to get the money for that? Do you really think you can fit that in with your schedule? I mean, how are you really going to do that? You don't even have the experience. And I can go on and on and on. You know, it's kind of funny because I've recently, and I'll tackle this in a few weeks. I recently finished Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And he says the exact same thing. And I think that book was written like 1930, 31, something like that. And he says, whatever you do, do not tell your friends, your neighbors, or your family anything that you are trying to create. And I think that that is solid wisdom. I think for most of us, we always will have a group of people around us, or people who will not be willing to support us and don't really want to see our success. And as sad as that is, we have to also be honest to ourselves about that fact, and not ruin our own opportunities. We shouldn't sabotage ourselves. So remember always that nature, from her clearly visible surface to her most arcane depths, is one vast storehouse of light and good, entirely devoted to your individual use. Your conscious oneness with the great whole is the secret of success. And once you have fathomed this, once you know this, you can enjoy your possession of the whole or part of it at will, because by your recognition, you've made it and can increasingly make it yours. Never forget that every physical thing, whether for you or against you, was a sustained thought before it was a thing. And I think one of the key words here is that it was a sustained thought, which means you held that same freaking thought forever for it to become here. Remember, when you create with your thoughts, it is of no physical substance yet. It is out in the ethers, and it is slowly making its way here to come into form. So if you sustain that fear, it will occur. You just might not know when it's going to occur. But if you sustain that same joy for the creation of something, it has no choice but to come here as an experience for you. Because one thing she says in this book is that that is the law, cause and effect at the level of the mind. That is the law. Therefore, you have to experience it. I'm going to write something down because I feel like it just came to my mind, and I'll come back to it as I said that. Okay. Thought as thought is neither good nor bad. It is creative action and always takes physical form. So remember, your mind is neutral. You are the one deciding to plant poison or something else very healthy and nutritious, something that is encouraging. The thoughts you dwell upon become the things you possess or do not possess. So when I said, and I feel like my guide just gave me this word, that's why I wrote it down. When I said that you have no choice but to experience the thought that you have sustained over time, is there, I was thinking as I was saying that, someone's going to ask, well, is there any way to kind of, you know, change that? If the thought has been coming, if you think about it like a comet that's headed for the planet, right, to destroy it, is there any way to give it a detour, you know, to detour its mission, its target? And I heard the word transmute as I said that, and I was like, oh crap, let me write this down, because recently I've been reading about transmutation. And I don't know personally if I believe that there is a way to shift that, because when something has gained momentum, I feel like it will hit its target. But if there's something that can deflect it, I would think it's the process of transmutation. And in a sense, when you transmute negative thoughts into positive thoughts, you have to really focus so much time and energy to the opposite direction of the spectrum. So if you were excessively negative, now you need to throw the weight of your focus behind being excessively positive, so that hopefully you can, you know, shift that experience so that it isn't so detrimentally harmful. So maybe it can soften the blow, but if you have sustained that focus for so long, the law has no choice but to deliver that to you, because it is the law of the universe, cause to effect, right? Okay. Anyway, everybody, I just want to say, never forget that everything physical, whether for you or against you, was a sustained thought before it was a thing. I think that that's super important. There are a lot more kernels of knowledge in this book that I really, really enjoy. I really hope you guys get a chance to check it out, because I think it's super helpful. And if you are someone like me who is really interested in trying to understand multiple perspectives on how the formless comes into form from being in the mind to experience, then I would highly encourage you to take a look at her books. I would say, though, what's interesting here is that there are many critics of these types of books, the same critics who also have a hard time with what's called prosperity gospel, like the whole Joel Osteen stuff. A lot of them say that they pander, like all of this material panders to our materialistic sides. So for example, is it really a good use of our visualizing powers to manifest like a new car, a new watch, etc.? And I understand that perception, because I myself have had that thought as well. That's why I think having a holistic approach to manifestation is super important. And that's why I read so much. For example, as I said before, so this is so redundant, you know, The Secret is a focus. I feel like the book is devoted to visualizing, which is a part of it. But the action part, the doing, is not really, you know, the idea that is given, you know, as fire from God to get you the thing that you're trying to do to assist you on your way so that you can manifest that money, so that you can get that new car, so that you can do these things. I feel like that part of the equation is missing. The other part of the equation that is missing, in my opinion, is the simple fact that not everything is meant for you this lifetime. So sometimes the universe has to say no, and it is for your highest good. That is not an experience that you are supposed to have. And that's something I feel like should have been included in that book. The same thing is, some of these challenges cannot be deflected. I'm not talking about the ones that you created in your mind, but just in general. Sometimes a sickness was put in your life's plan so that you could learn something from it that you couldn't learn otherwise. These are parts of the equation that I feel like are profoundly missing from the law of attraction, the law of manifestation, because there are certain laws in place. And I also feel like we also have our own specialized curriculum prior to our incarnation. So it's not going to look like everybody else's. And that's why it's so important to kind of do your own investigation and your own work, because your guide, all that is, will guide you to what it is that is helpful for you so that you could share that to others as well. Anyway, you guys, thank you so much for listening to this today. The book is actually not that long if you're interested in reading it. It's like 100 pages. You can knock it out in a week. There are some really great kernels of knowledge in this book that I just couldn't get to because it's already been an hour. But I would say, for those of you who are looking to create, I don't know, something, get some ideas on how to make your business more successful, you should maybe consider using the statement that she used over and over and over, which is, my mind is a center of divine operation. And perhaps repeat it daily and ask your guide and angels to help you with an idea so that it'll get you on your way, so that you can build your business, so you can get more clients, etc. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and tune in next week. Take care.